This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. British police have identified a 22-year-old British man as the bomber who attacked the Manchester Arena yesterday. They say Salman Abedi detonated a homemade bomb at the end of an Ariana Grande concert, killing at least 22 children, teens, and adults, and injuring many dozens more. Here's British Prime Minister Theresa May speaking earlier this morning.
It is now beyond doubt that the people of Manchester and of this country have fallen victim to a callous terrorist attack. This attack stands out for its appalling, sickening cowardice, deliberately targeting innocent, defenseless children and young people.
Greater Manchester Police Chief Constable Ian Hopkins said Abedi is of Libyan descent and that, quote, the priority remains to establish whether he was acting alone or as part of a network. Well, joining us now is Muhammad Rahim, North American Executive Director of the UK-based Quilliam International, a counter-extremist organization. Mr. Rahim, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, first of all, what's your reaction to Manchester Police saying that it may be a British-born person of Libyan descent who attacked the arena yesterday?
You know, this is a concern. I worked for U.S. counterterrorism for over a decade, and I would have been one of those analysts sifting through the data and trying to understand what's taking place. What we have is a community, particularly in the U.K., that is diverse. It's very different than the American context, particularly with Muslim communities. And so the challenge, particularly with law enforcement, intelligence services, state security services at large, is the ability to address a growing threat that's evolving, that's adaptive, that's morphed from the days of Al-Qaeda to now ISIS, and to what Quilliam we describe as self-starters. Oftentimes you hear the term lone wolf. We're a bit more surgical in our language in calling it self-starters, meaning there are individuals who are self-starting and radicalizing based off of a number of factors. And so this is alarming. This is concerning. It's something that we are addressing at the local level as well as the strategic high-level issues as well.
Well, the so-called Islamic State has claimed some responsibility for the attack. They posted in Arabic and English on their channels about this. I mean, how significant is it that we have this claim?
You know, there's not a surprise in terms of the Islamic State seeking to get notoriety and attention. They've been doing this for quite some time. So whether it is the Islamic State formally or it's informally them or someone who's just inspired by their rhetoric, what it shows is that the organization is diverse, it's adaptive, it's seeking to be as creative as possible. It's something that we have to monitor, itself. And so for me as a counterterrorism observer, as a researcher, as someone who monitors this and has been doing this well over 15 years, it's something that we have to be aggressive and proactive on. Any time that we see that sort of law enforcement is going in and going after doors, if you will, it's too late. It's the early stages prevention, working closely with Muslim communities. This cannot be seen as the new normal. Yeah. Communities themselves must take hold and be more attentive, more resilient, and more deliberate in their efforts to combat violent extremism.
So let me ask you about that, because, I mean, I just want to emphasize there's still so very much that we do not know. I mean, this is obviously an extremely active investigation. And by the way, as an aside, I'm seeing here in The Guardian that British police confirmed the suspect Abedi's identity only after officials in the United States passed that information to reporters against the wishes of British police and security services. So take us into that a little bit. I mean, what's the difference between the United States and the UK in terms of revealing identities of people they believe, may have perpetrated these terrible attacks?
You know, the U.S. and the U.K., we're a separate country, we have different laws. I mean, the time-honored issue that you've probably been hearing about quite some times of intelligence sharing, it is vital that in terms of law enforcement, intelligence apparatus are sharing information in real time. Sometimes it's a puzzle piece trying to put things together. So it's not a picture-perfect image. Countries themselves oftentimes aren't communicating with their fellow state security apparatus as well. And so this information being shared allegedly by American security folks, the jury's still out, but what I will say is that this is something that has to be done. And as information is coming in, sort of in fragmented pieces, trying to synthesize this in a way where it's coherent is a challenge. I mean, to be quite frankly, it's not easy, and it's difficult for some of the brave men and women who are counterterrorism officials, both in the U.S. and the U.K. as well.
Now, Mohammed Rahim, I'm just looking at this reporting that's just coming in, you know, just now or the past several minutes here. The Guardian is saying that even before Abedi was named, members of Manchester's Libyan community wondered whether the attacker may have been one of their own. And this is a quote from The Guardian, perhaps one of the young men who had fought in Libya during the 2011 revolution, some of whom came home traumatized and angry. Respond to that.
You know, this is communities themselves have some internal digging going on, too, as well. It's not easy. Communities, whether it's Libyan, whether it's Syrians, it's Iraqi, doesn't matter the particular ethnicity, they are struggling with trying to deal with the reality of there's a problem. It's no different than within sort of inner cities of dealing with crimes that sometimes it's hard to face and look inward. But to the fact of the matter is anytime you see innocent young children, boys and girls, who could be your niece, could be your nephew, could be your child, this is when communities have to make the distinction between what's what should be done that is right and that which is should be considered wrong. There is no justification for these actions. It's a crime against humanity. It's a crime against their religion as a whole. And it's a crime against those who seek to promote pluralism and seek to have a better life as they've migrated from very difficult conditions, whether it was in Libya or in other conflict zone areas throughout the world.
So let me ask you more then about a community like the Libyan community in Manchester. I mean, right now, even though we're less than 24 hours after this awful attack, we're still looking back now with not necessarily 2020 vision, but wondering, you know, what might have been. Again, this reporting coming in just now, members of the community recalling Salman Ramadan Abedi, again, the suspect that was named by police as, you know, some people remembering him as a quiet boy, very respectful. Others remembering him at a Manchester walk a mosque, looking at others, quote unquote, with hate. I mean, it's impossible to tell exactly what happened until a full investigation is completed. But if you are in this community right now, I mean, is it a time to take a closer look at anybody who may, you know, look at you, quote unquote, with hate and wonder what might be?
Yeah, I mean, this is what we will gather a lot of information sort of postmortem on what actually took place, perhaps reasons, rationale. We've seen an increase of just recruits with ISIS who've been high on drugs that you may have been hearing reports. So there are many indications that individuals may have mental health issues. They could be on drugs, as I mentioned. There are a number of variables that we just don't know early on in this phase. But what I've been saying for quite some time, and particularly Quilliam, what we've been arguing to as well, and someone who has monitored these issues for quite some time, is that communities themselves are the first lines of defense. Just like first responders are out there dedicating their lives, communities must be part of the solution. Communities also aren't just one single community. The Muslim community is not a monolith. There are many communities. And so there could be an online community this individual could have been involved with. There could have been a physical community this person could have been involved with in the mosque. It could be a community in which he was dealing with sort of challenges with his identity. It could be challenges of sexuality. It could be challenges of multiplicity of factors that we have to really unpack and think about a bit more. So we will gather more information. Time will tell. But we have to learn from these incidents, and that the devastation of a human life, human lives have been destroyed, families have been disrupted. This isn't just a UK story. This is a human story. And so what I call on is not just our UK friends, not just our American friends, but the entire Muslim community has to do a better job to address this internal threat. It's an existential concern. It's an existential problem, and it's something that the community cannot turn a deaf ear to as well.
What do you say to those people who hear that and respond, well, we cannot vilify and criminalize and treat every Muslim in our, you know, in the community as suspect?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a third generation African American Muslim. I'm part of the indigenous community born and raised in America, and I worked for the U.S. government protecting the society for over a decade, putting my life in the front lines and working with Muslims, Christians, Jews, black, white, atheist, agnostic. I'm part of the American Muslim community, and I've traveled throughout the Muslim world too as well. And so what I say is we can't stigmatize an entire 1.5 billion Muslims. But we must also address the reality of a cancer that's within the community. Mm-hmm. And we must address it through a careful, reflective, contemplative engagement that is open and honest.
Okay, so just two more questions here, because I appreciate your candor and also your experience, because there are counterterrorism questions both at the community level and at the global level. Just one more thing I'm seeing from The Guardian's reporting in the past hour here. There are some neighbors around the home where, again, the suspect, Salman Ramadan Abedi, lived, who say that, you know, apparently in recent weeks, he had taken to chanting Islamic verses loudly in the street. Now, again, are we living in a world where if someone is doing that, that's cause enough for concern to report them potentially to law enforcement and say, maybe you got to check this guy out? Or is doing so, again, infringing, you know, on the rights of people to live lives being free of being considered a suspect by virtue of just being Muslim?
It's a tough balance, absolutely. I mean, right now you have communities who are, we have to be sensitive to the political climate that we're living in. Anyone who says otherwise, it's not telling the truth. We are in a very difficult time that we're living. I mean, we've seen history certainly repeats itself and has repeated itself. Communities must be practical. They must realize that people are nervous. People are scared. Despite Islam being part of the fabric of UK society from its inception, the reality of Muslims have been part of the American fabric since its inception. It's historical. We know that this is taking place, but the climate that we live in, we must balance between pragmatism and also the reality and complexities of this global epidemic. Without a balance in that fashion, then we will see more people who are alarmed, who will grow in sort of anti-Muslim hatred, some real, some are perceived. And if we don't do it in a way where it's addressing it in a fashion where we're open and honest, then we will have a society that will be more fearful, more intimidated of over 1.5 billion Muslims who've large majority of the American Muslim community, the UK Muslim community in the globe, have been the result, they have seen the result of the atrocities of the Islamic State. More Muslims have been killed by these attacks than others.
Yeah. Well, that's Mohammed Rahim. He's executive director for North America for Quilliam International, a counter-extremist organization based in the UK. Mohammed Rahim, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.